You're listening to KBOO Portland. Stay tuned for the Holy Crowley Hour.
Okay, boys and girls, let's go! Ow. All right! Another wretched morning, a wretched October day. No sound of angels in the trees, Christmas. But then a voice starts whipping round, the vision comes to play. And this is what the voice declaimed. It's Tornado Ferion's birthday! Don't give us no facts, we'll kick your ass, cause we're the heralds of Crowley Mass.
Good evening, and welcome to the Holy Crowley Hour, brought to you this month by the National Rifle Association. At the NRA, our mission is to protect your Second Amendment right to kill pretty much anyone who isn't white, Christian, and barely literate. The NRA, where our motto is and always has been, God, guns, and borscht, but not necessarily in that order. For those of you who can't speak Russian yet, or should I say nyet, you might be asking yourself, what is the Holy Crowley Hour? Sometime several years ago, a KBOO talk show caller made an accusation. She claimed there were several late-night DJs at the station who belonged to an Aleister Crowley cult. Aleister Crowley, for those of you who don't know, was a remarkable Englishman who lived from 1875 to 1947. He founded the religion of Thelema and styled himself a prophet leading humanity into a new age of self-realization. He was also accused by some of being a Satanist, and the press at the time denounced him as the wickedest man in the world. Now back to that KBOO caller. In her defense, she was partly right. Many of our late-night DJs, myself included, are members of a cult, and this cult is led by a Crowley. However, it's not the cult led by Aleister Crowley. Rather, it's the one led by his brother Carl, Carl Crowley. Carl is Aleister's little-known brother, and that's just the way he wants it. You're probably wondering by now, is there any difference between the two Crowley cults? Yes, there's some major differences. For instance, Aleister Crowley's cult has but one commandment, do what thou wilt. Carl Crowley's cult also has but one commandment, do what I tell you. And that's the commandment we follow here on the Holy Crowley Hour. Whatever Carl tells me to say and play on the show, that's what I say and play. I do what I'm told and have no voice in what you're about to hear. The programming is under Carl's complete control. However, I will say it's fortunate for you, the listener, that Carl Crowley has impeccable taste. I'll be playing radio theater, podcasts, comedy, novelty bits, and a few tunes guaranteed to entertain and enlighten, which is a whole lot better than I can say for some cults that have absolutely no sense of taste, like the cult that controls Portland's K2TV. If I were a follower of that cult, instead of radio nuggets tonight, you might be hearing a must-run promo denouncing the troubling trend of irresponsible, one-sided news stories plaguing our country. In their defense, K2 and its parent company, the Sinclair Broadcast Group, plagues our country with only responsible, one-sided news stories. Had to get that in. So stay tuned for another exciting episode of the Holy Crowley Hour. I think you'll enjoy it. If not, well, I'd keep it to myself if I were you. Oops, my mistake. I meant to say, if I weren't you.
And there ain't no grace, there ain't no guilt, this is the Lord, do what thou wilt. And his name is Crowley, it rhymes with holy, it isn't crowley, that rhymes with foully.
You're listening to the Holy Crowley Hour on KBOO Community Radio. Podcasts have become enormously popular in the past few years, and as with any medium, there are several very good podcasts and a bunch that are, let's say, not so good. What we can say is that podcasts have helped revive the lost art of radio theater. For tonight's Holy Crowley Hour, we reach across the pond. No, not that pond. This one, which is also known in podcast circles as the Atlantic Ocean, as we welcome guests David K. Barnes and Tom Crowley, no relation, of the British podcast Wooden Overcoats.
Wooden Overcoats is a very funny and touching audio sitcom featuring a rivalry between two morticians on the fictional English Channel island of Piffling. In addition to gaining an audience of fans all over the world, Wooden Overcoats is a British Podcast Awards winner, a four-time winner of the Audioverse Awards, a pre-Europa nominee, and a Best of iTunes selection. I should also mention it just became the number one podcast in Ireland, which is no small potatoes. David K. Barnes and Tom Crowley, no relation, welcome to the Holy Crowley Hour.
Hello, lovely to be here.
Yeah.
And David, let's start with you. You're the head writer for Wooden Overcoats, and your background is in theater and playwriting, including a graduate degree from the University of London. How did you go from writing for the stage to audio podcasts?
I've always been interested in audio comedy, and I'd written a different show, which has been made a couple of times, called Drayton Trench. And in doing that show, that the production at that time starred Tom Crowley.
Hello.
And also Felix Trench and Beth Eyre, amongst many other very talented actors. And it was after that that the idea of creating a brand new sitcom show as a podcast came about. It's Felix and Tom said, "Oh, it'd be nice to do a show about rival funeral directors. David, what do you reckon?" And I did sketched out some notes, said, "What's something like this?" I went, "Oh, that'd be lovely." And then we sort of chatted for a while and to sort of flesh out what we'd like. And I went away and wrote a script, and we went, "Oh, this will be a lot of fun." And then it sort of snowballed from there.
And if I may interrupt, Dave.
Sure, Tom.
When I say that we have both long loved radio comedy, being British and having Radio 4 over here. I grew up on The Goon Show and Old Harry's Game and other shows, and you love Hancock's Half Hour and a bunch of others. So you've always had a little bit of a radio comedy love inside of you.
Yeah, I love these sort of some of the sort of the radio sitcoms, especially the idea that, you know, the old maxim that you can sort of do anything on radio. And so having a show like Wooden Overcoats that can have quite quiet sort of dialogue scene set in just a location, in one moment and the next you can have a huge crowd of people chasing somebody over a cliff and scaling a lighthouse and all that, and it doesn't cost any more than
not to mention a talking mouse.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, it'd be absolute hell to try and train a talking mouse on television. Of course, you know, it's still difficult to train a mouse to speak into a radio mic, but
I'd say we're about halfway there with the real mouse.
Oh yes, yeah.
I was certainly starting to hear vowels. I wouldn't say that the performance ready.
No, the mouse is dubbed.
Yeah, that's why we got Belinda Langan to dub it.
Yeah.
She does a great job. Well, Tom and David, I want to mention too that you are both in your late 20s right now, about 27, 28 or so. Or
I am 30 whole years old.
Oh, my.
We were at that when we started last. Now, yes, we are both now 30.
So it just surprises me, but I take a lot of pleasure from it that you are fans of what could be considered old time radio to you. The Goon Show was what late 50s, early 60s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's such a part of the firmament over here as well. I mean, my mum, who I mentioned to you, is from Portland. She came over here very young, and she recently retired, but she was with the BBC Symphony Orchestra for many, many years, meaning she had a discount at the BBC shop. And my favorite moments of the week were when she'd come home with a heavily discounted CD of The Goon Show. And there's such a root. I mean, Monty Python is, I mean, as far as anyone can tell, the only BBC comedy, the only British comedy program, I should say, that was ever produced, when you read most articles.
Yes.
And they owe everything that they created to The Goon Show. So, you know, and the inheritance just goes on and on from there. And it's such a part of the firmament of what comedy is over here.
And, of course, one of the characters in Wooden Overcoats, the agnostic Reverend Wavering, is played by Andy Secombe, who is the son of Harry Secombe from The Goon Show.
I was going to ask you about that. In fact, I looked it up. Yeah. He's actually Sir Harry Secombe. So I didn't.
Yes.
No.
I didn't know he was knighted.
He was absolutely furious.
Now, Tom, you also have a background in theater, and you adapted the 1981 musical film, which we know here, Shock Treatment. It was a sequel to the Rocky Horror Picture Show, for the stage. So how did you make that transition from writing for the stage and acting for the stage to acting for audio and writing for audio?
Well, I guess I'd say that generally I'm a comedian first and foremost, and it feels a long, long time ago now. But I started out with a group called Four Sad Faces, who then became Sad Faces when there were no longer four of us. And we very, very lucky, very young. We were actually taken under the wing of a BBC producer, and we produced 2.5 hours of sketches for the radio when we were, I mean, I think I was about 20. One of us was 19. And they still air sometimes. It's very strange. People still tell me, oh, I turned on Radio 4 Extra and your voice was on there. We have no idea when they're going to be on. But so we went from that, which, well, interestingly enough, actually, we did that in 2008. And then the global financial crisis hit, and suddenly commissions were far further and fewer between. So we had those two episodes, and then our kind of the prospect of further radio stuff ended. But meanwhile, we decided we'd start going to the Edinburgh Fringe and doing live sketch comedy. We did in total 6 shows across about 8 years. And so it was all one huge baptism of fire in terms of writing for radio and the stage and learning to perform comedy, learning to structure scenes and sketches. And that was kind of the biggest education I had.
Also, I would imagine the Goon Show and a lot of Fawlty Towers. Of course, that was video. But a lot of the shows that you mentioned growing up on and being influenced by would help you as you listen to them to see what the possibilities of radio are as opposed to the stage or TV or films.
Oh, absolutely. And so many others as well. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy was a huge thing as well. And the original Mighty Boosh radio show actually was a real impact on me, particularly when it came to because usually in British radio comedy, you have an audience present. And we knew from very early on with Wooden Overcoats, we didn't want an audience there. And immediately my mind went to the first and I don't think it was the BBC, actually. I think it was originally on like a Talk Sport radio or something in London. But it was bought for the BBC. But yeah, the first, it was totally self-produced, the first Mighty Boosh radio show. And it has such love in the sound design and the weird, creepy mood. And that really rang home for me. And that was what was very at the forefront of my mind when we started talking about doing Wooden Overcoats, because I thought, this will be a place with a sound world and a mood and characters and strange journeys. And I still think back, that's kind of the vibe that comes to mind when we consider where to take these characters and what settings to put them in.
Oh, yeah. I think mood is especially important in audio, and it's something that's almost critical to doing it right, which you do in Wooden Overcoats, which I want to get to now. It's one of the funniest and most professionally produced audio podcasts that I've ever heard. David, we mentioned the premise, and you mentioned it too, as kind of that initial inspiration, two rival morticians on a very small island. I think it's about 1 square mile across, you say. You say it's hidden in the English Channel. Yeah. That doesn't seem like the most fruitful premise for a comedy sitcom. So how did you guys work it out initially?
I think for me, I thought, what's the nature of the rivalry itself? And I thought, if you have two funeral directors on opposing sides, but they're both equally as good as each other, you certainly can get something from that, but it didn't really come to mind. But there's... I looked at some of my other sort of favourite sitcoms and where characters' motivations come from. And I really liked... there was a sitcom on in the 1980s called Ever Decreasing Circles, which was about this fussy guy who with a long-suffering wife. And they had a new neighbour who was this sort of very, very charming, charismatic chap. And it sort of stirs up lots of old resentments. And it's quite, in some ways, very gentle sort of sitcom with moments of surrealism. But it's a relationship I quite liked, and it was sort of quite good-natured. And I thought, well, I'd like to take something like that, but make it much bigger. So if you've got a character who is a funeral director who doesn't seem to really care much about people's feelings in a job where feelings are incredibly important, and then... put that opposite somebody who treats funerals as if they're a kind of like a social occasion and a bit of a party, and everyone then agrees with that guy. I thought, that's very, very funny. And so if we follow the person who's not as good and is quite failing, which I think British sitcoms especially, we love sitcoms about people who aren't doing terribly well, mainly owing to their own faults. But and then the trick there of also trying to make sure that Eric, despite being the antagonist, is also a character we like, usually just by making genuinely, for much of the show, entirely genuine. You know, he's a person who doesn't lie to people. He genuinely wants to make other people's lives happier and better. And so when the two of them, you know, hit each other in that kind of almost like somebody throwing yourself against the wave, crashing against the rock and nothing really happening, I think you get a really nice dynamic going.
And we should mention also that I don't know, whoever plays Eric Chapman just does a great job. So I think that works.
He's a very dangerous man called Ernesto Contugo, and you shouldn't go anywhere near him.
Yes, but what a voice actor.
We can't get rid of him. He's so talented. We can only get access to him when the South American prison that he's in allows visiting hours, so we have to get all the lines in the Canberra. but seriously, thank you very much for saying.
Tom, by the way, plays Eric Chapman.
And, yes, I do.
His rival is Rudyard Funn, ironically named. He is the one who doesn't have any of the social graces that David talked about. And those are the two morticians on the island of Piffling. You created this amazing world. And I guess through the three seasons now, since 2015, you've expanded that world with additional characters and all sorts of contrivances. It seems like you've got a lot more material to go for future seasons. Is that the plan?
Yeah, certainly at the moment we're talking about where we could go, what bits we haven't done. I think at the end of season three, without giving any spoilers to those who haven't heard it, there are several sort of plot elements which are seeded in, which can be picked up later. The characters have come very far from the first season, and includes, you know, a lot of people pick up on, whilst Rudyard is very consistently the lack of social graces, doesn't quite understand how a business can really work and just keeps running forward. His sister, Antigone, played by Beth Eyre, is a character who started off very much as a person who would never leave the mortuary and can never go into sunlight under any circumstances. And over three seasons has developed in lots of other different directions as a kind of counterpoint to Rudyard. Another thing, it is really fun to have explored, is with Eric, who starts the series as the sort of really perfect person. But inevitably, as three seasons go by, and I think it's something you explore much more in the future, this person who is starting to unravel a bit is a bit more likely to say, look, I'm getting really annoyed by this. This situation is quite ridiculous. But he still remains genuinely quite polite about it. But you can tell he's getting much more irritated. So it's really fun to explore those extra dimensions of the characters, which you can only really do in a long form sort of story where we can explore them over quite a long period of time.
I heard previous interviews with Radio Jersey, Radio Guernsey. You mentioned that for most of the staff, including the actors, it's a labor of love. They're just passionate about it. This is not a BBC production. These are actors who are not getting paid probably what they normally would get paid for their acting skills. So it is coming through mostly the live shows, Kickstarter. And is there any other funding? Are there plans for additional funding?
Some merchandising. We also had, you can find woodenovercoast.com, you can buy t-shirts and mugs. also, we did have one sponsor. We had a sponsor for season two. We recorded custom adverts for them. They provided some of the money, but really that's it.
We have a Christmas special, and we had a summer special. They're raised by, they're sort of an extra, sort of a bonus on the Kickstarters. If we get that amount, we do an extra episode, and that episode goes direct to Kickstarter backers first off, and it's then available via the website to buy for whatever the person, you know, whatever you want to pay for it at all. It's, you know, totally up to individual choice.
That's right. It's pay what you want on woodenovercoast.com, the summer special and the Christmas special. Buy them now.
We'll make sure we'll put that on the website, the woodenovercoats.com website.
Thank you very much.
And that's it. You said, you know, season one definitely was a complete labor of love. This was really coming together with a great idea, and then playing with actors, and a lot of people donated their time because they really believed in the project. And from seasons two onwards, everyone is paid, and we try to ensure everyone is paid a legal amount. It's certainly still less than you would get on a BBC radio production, alas, as we still are not near those levels of pay. But we do try to make sure that everyone is compensated for their time, and with each season we increase that the amount of money that we can give to people.
It's strange as well, because there's no established rule for this.
No,
because over here, really, the only things we have are audiobooks, which seem to have a kind of very different working practice altogether, a different process and a different pay scale. And radio comedy and drama have a whole different pay, minimum wage kind of setup, that, or a standard pay that they have decided for themselves. But it's very few companies working together who are funded in a very different way to an independent production. And so for us, we really had to find our own, what we considered reasonable and also manageable in terms of fundraising. So, it's been, certainly for me as a working actor, it's a payday. You know, it's incredibly nice to be, well, specifically for me as someone who's been involved since day one, mm-hmm. and as of many of the cast and crew, it's wonderful to now consider this a job and to get to do it once a year or near enough. And to know that it'll be something that I can do in a supportive environment. And, hey, get paid, you know, like a real job.
And I know that Wooden Overcoats is on Facebook, easily searched, and also on Twitter. One more time, though, David, where can listeners access the episodes? There's all three seasons. There's eight episodes per season, so 24 episodes up there, plus some bonus material. And if they like what they hear, contribute to your Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah, we're on www.woodenovercoats.com, and you can also find us via iTunes and all your preferred methods of usually finding podcasts. If we usually sort of keep people updated as to what we're doing via Facebook and Twitter. So if there's anything going on, or the Kickstarter campaign is there, that's where you'll find it. Equally, if you go to the website, again, www.woodenovercoats.com, you can go to the shop area where there are various bits of merchandise like mugs and T-shirts, but also that's where you can find some of the special episodes like our Christmas one, Rudyard Ruins Christmas, and the summer one, Rudyard Ruins Summer. Which again, they are available to anyone for whatever they want to chip in. You can buy it and download it.
Don't think that the bonus episodes, just because they're sort of slightly separate to main continuity and we need to pay some money for them, don't think that means they're not as good.
Oh,
if anything, they're much better than every other episode. So you definitely want to be investing in them.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, David K. Barnes and Tom Crowley, thanks very much for joining us on the Holy Crowley Hour tonight. I'm changing the pronunciation of the show in honor of Tom.
Thank you very much.
It was lovely speaking to you.
Let's play Tom and David out with the very first Wooden Overcoats from September 2015, titled The Bane of Rudyard.
Now, hidden in the English Channel is an island called Piffling. On the island is a village, Piffling Vale, and the village has a square, and the square has this lovely little antique shop. But opposite the antique shop is a funeral home, which is where much of this little chronicle would be set, I'm afraid. You see, I want to tell you all about a man named Rudyard Funn. He owns the funeral parlour. He's responsible for all the funerals in Piffling Vale. And today, he experienced what was undoubtedly the worst day of his life, which, to be honest, was probably long overdue.
Wooden Overcoats by David K. Barnes. Episode 1. The Bane of Rudyard.
We gather here today to celebrate the life of Stanley Jessup Carmichael, who was taken from us only 5 days ago.
It all began with a funeral. The antique dealer, Stanley Carmichael, whose shop was immediately opposite Rudyard's premises, had led a life of peace and ordered calm for some 89 years and been subsequently crushed to death by a granite sundial.
I confess that I never actually bought anything from him. His price has been quite steep, actually, though I did have my eye on that sundial. I might still be tempted if it came down in price. Hint, hint.
Stanley's relatives pricked up their ears at the prospect of getting something for that granite sundial, whilst nearby, his eyes sunken and his skin pale and drawn, stood Rudyard, looking at his watch and wishing strongly that the Reverend wasn't an agnostic.
He's undoubtedly looking down at us from his place with God. Unless you don't believe in that sort of thing, which I won't hold against you. Mind you, God probably will, unless he doesn't exist, in which case he won't have anything to complain about, really.
Reverend.
Sorry, did somebody say...
Reverend.
Oh, hello, Rudyard.
You're rambling.
Sorry?
You're rambling again.
Oh, God, am I?
Yes.
I'm so sorry. Where was I?
His spirit looking down on us from his place.
From his place with God. Yes, yes, thank you. Right. I'm looking down at us from his place with, no. No, actually, but I don't suppose we could have a quick show of hands, could we?
No, come on.
If you believe in God, could you put your hands up? Can we all do that? Put your hand up if you believe in the, about half. What I might do is do the service twice.
Well, we don't have time.
Once with God in it and the other without.
No, we're overrunning.
Oh, but I thought I might read out a few psalms.
Which ones?
I don't mind. I'd be happy to take requests if anyone's got any favourites.
No. We're 16 minutes behind schedule. Nearly 17. Georgie, wake up!
I don't want to.
We need the coffin in the ground. Now.
Sir, it's a very heavy coffin.
What's your point?
I'm the only pallbearer.
Oh, stop moaning. Put your back into it.
Oh, fine.
Do we have time for some funny anecdotes?
Late as it is, and it's pissing it down, so no.
Ruining everything.
There you are, Reverend, losing them.
Oh, I thought they were rather getting into it.
Not him, you.
Me.
You horrid little man, stop hurrying things along.
Don't you know what a schedule is?
So rude.
bones.
This isn't my only gig today, you know. Got Mr. Askew to measure up in half an hour.
He's not dead.
Well, he doesn't look healthy, though, does he?
Stop talking. We're trying to honour Stanley.
Honour Stanley? You didn't even like him.
How dare you?
I noticed at the shop you slipped that carriage clock down your blouse when you thought no one was looking. And the dressing table.
Oh, I knew it.
Oh, shut up. Bill swiped the portrait of Eva Braun.
Bill, I wanted that portrait.
Oh, you can't have it.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jerry, I just lost control. Ow!
Oh, never, come, everyone. Stay calm. Jerry, put that shovel down.
All right, Georgie, get the body in the ground.
Sir, they don't look very happy. Well,
of course they don't look happy. It's a funeral. Off you go.
Their service completed, Rudyard Funn and Georgie Crusoe fled the cemetery and hurried back to the funeral home. Established by local character and serial bigamist Gilbert Funn in the 15th century, Funn Funerals has always maintained a solid reputation for being the only funeral home on the island.
Oh, of course, it could be up to a good thing back there. You saw Stanley's widow.
Sad old lady.
Yes, when she took a swing at her son-in-law, I think she fell into the grave instead. I don't know if it was fatal, but it looked promising to me.
Do you think we'll ever have a quiet funeral?
Oh, asking for the impossible never helped anyone.
People smiling, swapping funny memories. I'm just not sure that every funeral should end in violent conflict.
Georgie, once you've been here a few more months, you'll realise that funerals will always end in bloodshed. There's very little that you or I can do about it. Now, go and get the measuring kit. I want to go to Mr. Askey's and see if he's dead yet.
Are you sure it's worth the bother?
Oh, we've gone round every day for the last 6 weeks. I'm not giving up now. Hop to it.
Yes, sir.
And get me a dry jacket. And another hat. Where's Antigone? Antigone! Now look here. Yes? Stanley's widow. Ha! I knew it. No, nothing. Sorry. We can fit her in at 6 o'clock. Well, I'd leave her in the ground for the moment. It'll save time in the long run. No, she shouldn't have been brawling at her age. Of course I'd have fancied my chances against her. I'm 35 and she was 82. See you at 6. Georgie! Got a full day ahead of us. Where's Antigone?
Try the mortuary.
You in the mortuary, Antigone? Antigone, in the mortuary, Antigone? Antigone, are you in the...
What?
I'm back.
I'd rather look at the corpses. Does rest in peace mean nothing to you?
Well, I don't hear the guests complaining. Got room for another?
Is it Mr. Askey?
Not yet. This one's a bonus.
That's Antigone, Rudyard's twin sister, despite being actually born 1 week afterwards. The poor dear had been diagnosed with depression within 20 minutes of being born, a world record, which gave her no consolation at all.
So how was it today?
Vicar's getting worse, and of course it was raining, and inevitably it ended with a punch-up over a portrait of Eva Braun. But personally, I found it all very moving.
Brilliant. So that's another grieving widow we'll have to apologise to.
No, we won't.
Why not?
She fell into the grave and died before I left.
She did what?
It's been a very productive morning.
You really have no concept of what good service is, do you?
I'd love to disagree with you, and I'm doing it now.
I've been in the mortuary all morning, and do you know what I've been up to?
I'm sure I don't want to know.
I have spent the past 5 hours mixing formaldehyde and methanol with clementines, and a tiny dash of cinnamon. That's what I've been doing for 5 hours.
Should I ask why?
To try and make our embalming fluid smell nicer, so the bodies will smell nicer. Because have you ever really smelt a body, Rudyard?
Why do we still talk to each other?
Now, thanks to me, they'll smell brighter, fresher, not like bodies at all. That's the sort of service I'm striving for, Rudyard. I want them to forget that the body is a body.
Yes, that'll work. Our granddad's dead, but don't worry, because he smells like Christmas.
It's attention to detail, Rudyard. It's how to run a business. You wouldn't know.
We get the body in the coffin in the ground on time.
Sir, you had the jackets been eaten by moths. I saw the whole thing.
Not now. Georgie, how long did it take to get the coffin in the ground this morning?
A couple of seconds.
Now that's a good service.
Because I dropped it.
But it got where it needed to be, and that's what they pay us for.
Rudyard, for the very last time. They don't want chaos, they don't want stress, and they don't want a relative dead before the first has even been buried.
Well, how do you know what they want?
In the name of sanity, Rudyard.
Look, I've got a very busy day ahead, so we can just get back into the mortuary and...
Hello. Yes? Eric Chapman, I'm new to the place. Just arrived.
Good morning.
Georgie, leave it to the professionals. Good morning. We've not met.
No, because I'm new. to the place.
You don't need to brag about it. I've met people before.
You're Mr. Rudyard Funn of Funn Funerals.
That's correct.
Terrific name. I suppose you put the fun in funerals.
No, of course we don't. What's obscene?
Sure. Never mind. Well...
Hello, Mr. Chapman.
Oh, Jesus!
Is this too close?
A little bit.
Sorry.
Don't mention it.
Sorry, I'm Antigone. Sorry, pleased to meet you.
Ah, likewise. Call me Eric. Are you in charge?
I'm the mortician, where the action is.
I bet there's not much you don't know about the body, eh, Antigone?
That sounded like a double meaning. It's called flirting. Oh, gosh, is it?
Well, no.
No, it was lovely smashing. Do it again. Haven't made it awkward. Damn!
Haven't got all day. Yes, so, Rudyard, Antigone, and...
Georgie, hi.
That's enough.
Well, I saw you at the funeral, didn't I?
Yeah, helping out. Job.
Georgie, don't give away company secrets.
I was only...
Hang on. Were you at the funeral this morning?
Yes, I was.
And I'm sure you were impressed with what you saw, Mr. Chapman, but we really are frightfully...
Actually, I wasn't entirely sure it came off.
I'm sorry.
For a start, it got a little bit violent, didn't it?
Did you think so?
At the end, yes.
I'm not sure what funeral you were watching, Mr. Chapman, but all I saw was good, clean mourning.
Didn't someone die?
A very convenient place for it to happen, Georgie.
I'm not...
There you go. Don't let us keep you, Mr. Chapman.
And I thought there could have been a greater attention to detail. Stop me if I'm getting too critical.
Okay, I'll stop you there.
Shut up. Carry on, Mr. Chapman.
Eric.
Gosh.
I have to say, it all looked a little bit grim. I mean, it's a funeral time, party time, but even so, I always think these occasions should be a celebration of life rather than going on about death. Do you know what I mean?
Nope.
I mean, I don't want to be made even more miserable. I want to remember those happy, magnificent memories. I want a cheerful atmosphere. Bright flowers, music, funny recollections.
Sweeter-smelling fluids.
Exactly. Fluids.
I think they're very important.
Sure thing. That's what I mean. Sorting out those little details. Pushing the boat out. Or the hearse out. it's just my 2 cents for what it's worth.
Well, I don't know what planet you live on, Mr. Chapman, but...
Thank you. We'll bear those things in mind, won't we, Rudyard?
Over my dead...
Smashing!
Anyway, I thought I'd swing by...
Oh, any time.
Thank you.
Any time at all.
Yes. I was just swinging by to see the competition.
Competition?
Yes.
You mean like a raffle?
Not exactly.
I hate raffle.
It's a strange thing to hate. Anyway, I meant you lot. Funn Funerals, the local competition in funerals.
You're an undertaker.
Well, a client prefer funeral director.
You're just visiting, though.
Oh, no, I live here now. I'm setting myself up.
Your own funeral home?
Yeah, Chapman's. Not quite as catchy as Funn Funerals, but there we are.
Where are you going to be?
You know the antique dealer you buried, Stanley Carmichael. I'm just taking over his premises.
Just across the square.
That's right. Opposite you, actually. We'll probably see a lot of each other. Compare notes, swap stories, down the pub. Mine's a light ale, by the way. well, did someone die in here?
Goodbye, Chapman.
Oh, sure. Well, glad to meet you, Rudyard. Antigone.
Chapman.
Georgie.
See you later.
That's enough.
Okay. Oh. Enjoy yourselves. Oh, the sun's come out.
Well, if he thinks I'm going to buy him a light ale, he's very much mistaken.
Oh, shut up, Rudyard. This is actually very serious.
He seemed fine.
No, he didn't, Georgie. Coming over here, waving his credentials in our faces, giving us feedback. My God.
I thought you liked him.
Liked him? Liked him?
Yeah. You were talking about fluids and everything.
That's professional chit-chat, for God's sake. Do you think I like gorgeous, handsome men, do you? Exactly. It's disgusting. It's disgusting.
I can't think of a scenario where I would buy someone a light ale.
Rudyard, focus. He is serious competition.
Him? Competition? Are you listening to the man?
No, she wasn't. She was gazing into his eyes.
Georgina, go and make some tea.
We haven't got a kettle.
Buy one.
Fine.
Rudyard, we're finished. I think I'll take a cyanide capsule.
We're not finished. We're an established firm, going back centuries. Nobody around here is going to book a funeral with a complete stranger.
Rudyard, look at his shop.
What is it?
He's already changed the sign. Chapman's, just like he said.
Yeah, I'll admit he's working quickly.
That does it. You've got to see the mayor. Tell him this village isn't big enough for 2 funeral homes.
That's not a bad idea, actually. I'll see him now.
Rudyard scuttled across the village square and up the steps leading into Piffling Hall. He was shown into the office of the Right Honourable Mayor Desmond Desmond, a man who felt that the most wonderful words in the English language were, "I'm sure it's going to be fine."
Mr. Rudyard, fun to see you, sir.
Oh, thank you, Marjorie.
Your Worship, I really am most desperately sorry to...
Where are you?
Down here, Rudyard. Under the desk.
Why?
Oh, just sitting here, you know, doing a bit of thinking. Big world out there.
Yes, I came to ask you...
Rudyard, do you know what the difference is between a village and a town?
Well, a town has a greater area.
Yes.
Higher population. Mm-hmm. More amenities.
Ah, amenities, yes.
A mayor.
Yes, oh, God. Well, exactly, yes.
I actually came to
see
you about...
We have to do something with our lives, haven't we, Rudyard? Don't you think?
Yes.
I look at my seal of office sometimes and all my envelopes, and I read my name, and have I done enough, I ask myself. Am I even right honourable? Because I don't feel it.
Well, to call yourself right honourable, you have to be a judge or a privy councillor.
Really? I've got to change all my stationery now. You see, this is just the sort of thing I'm talking about. What have I earned? What have I achieved? God knows we have to try and justify ourselves somehow.
I don't like the man across the road from me.
Exactly. And then what with my sister passing the bucket last week? Oh, top draw send-off you chaps gave her, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Pity it rained.
Yes, well...
Can't help that. Well. Or the ground subsidence. Still, we all laughed seeing her flopping about like that. Anyway, do you know what I have decided to do, Rudyard? I am going to turn this village into a town. That's what I'm going to do. I mean, things must expand, mustn't they?
Probably.
Do you think so? Good. She used to say terrible things to me, my sister.
I've got a problem, actually.
Have you? Well, can I help? Because I'd really like to be useful.
I think you can be. You see, Your Worship, there's this man.
He's not worth it, Rudyard.
Yes. What? No, I mean, this man is opening a new funeral home, directly across the road from mine.
Is that a problem?
We can't have two funeral homes, can we?
Can we? Why not?
Well, it'd be ridiculous.
Oh, I don't want to look ridiculous.
Exactly. If we had two funeral homes, why not two fire stations, two hospitals, two mayors?
Two mayors? Could it really get that far?
I'd hate to speculate.
Help me up, would you? Yes. I think we had better stab this in the bud immediately. Thank you, Rudyard.
Thank you, Your Worship.
Get me out of the office anyway.
Out from under the desk.
We won't talk about that. Marjorie, cancel my appointments for today.
There aren't any.
Thank you. Off we go, Rudyard.
Upon arriving at Chapman's, Rudyard and the, until recently, Right Honourable Mayor Desmond discovered that the place was about ready to open. And it wasn't yet even midday. Rudyard braced himself for a sinister journey into the unknown.
Wasn't this place an antique shop a few hours ago?
I don't understand. Does he manage to do all this?
Bit flash, isn't it? All these happy colours. Not a patch on your setup. Look, not a speck of dust anywhere.
I mean, he arrived this morning.
As we said, though, these sofas are very comfy. Is that a coffee machine?
Yes.
Does your place have one of those?
We bought a kettle half an hour ago.
Oh. Hi, sorry to keep you waiting. As you can imagine, it's all go here.
Is that a lift?
Mr. Mayor, it's a pleasure to meet you. Eric Chapman. There's some chocolate truffles in the bowl there. Help yourself.
Ooh, lovely.
Would you like the tour? I'd love to show you around. It's still not quite finished.
Perhaps another time, Mr. Chapman.
You've got a lift.
Now, I don't know quite how to say this, but...
I have to say what, Mr. Mayor?
Well, it is very naughty of you to have done all this, isn't it?
Is it?
Without permission, I mean.
But you gave me permission.
Did I?
I mean, before I came here, I was calling back and forth with your people and everything got sorted and, where are we? Here we are. Look, there's your signature.
Yes. The smiley face in the oh there, it's definitely mine. You must understand, I don't always read everything I am given. I am usually kept very busy.
I'm sure. Don't worry about it.
What do you think, Rudyard?
It's a really nice lift.
Oh, thanks, Rudyard.
Yes, well, even with all this, I mean, I am the mayor, aren't I? And I have the perfect right to change my mind.
Oh, do you not want me here?
Oh, no. It's not that. But, you see, it's just that, well, Rudyard...
Sorry? Yes, now look here.
Yes?
We've already got a funeral home.
Exactly! We've already got one. And with the best will in the world, we can't have two funeral homes, can we?
Why?
Because, well, then you see, we'd apparently have to have two hospitals, you see?
That's a great idea.
Is it? Oh, well, good. I'll get on to that.
Oh, brilliant.
But, no, nevertheless, a village just can't sustain two funeral homes, can it?
You could be right there.
Could I?
Told you so.
But you know what could sustain two funeral homes?
No.
A town.
A town, you say?
No.
Now, don't get me wrong. This is a great village, but I think it's going to be an even greater town. And I want to help you do that in the only way I can. With a funeral home.
Can I ask a question?
Go for it.
If we had two funeral homes, would we need two mayors as well?
No. It's ridiculous.
Oh, excellent. In that case, I hereby pronounce this funeral home open.
What? What are they doing there? Oh, we're taking advance orders. It's just a service we provide.
Well, I won't take up any more of your time, Mr. Chapman. Oh,
please, Mr. Mayor. It's Eric.
Oh, best of luck, Eric. If you're ever at a loose end, do pop by the hall. Sometimes we have movie nights.
Well, I'll remember that. And if you need our services, it's on the house.
Oh, tremendous. Looking forward to it now.
Now, hang on.
Glad to have you here,
Mr. Mayor.
Oh, no. Call me Desmond. TTFN.
I'll catch you later, Desmond.
Shall I leave the doors open?
Oh, if you would. Rudyard, I'm sorry I can't stay and chat. Can I get you anything?
Oh.
I know what. Make yourself a coffee.
Ooh.
I better see to that queue. Enjoy yourself. Don't forget the truffles.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Afternoon now. I'm delighted to say welcome to Chapman's. And remember, we put the fun in funerals.
After a coffee and a couple of truffles, Rudyard stormed out, seething with resentment. He kicked a small dog and got bitten by its owner. Having got back to fun funerals, Rudyard set down a chair by the window and stared out across the road, muttering out loud to his only real friend in the world.
It's a funeral home. Who the hell do they think they are, eh?
Exactly. I give him a week. All right, maybe two. He might have gold blend and lounge music, but you can't put a gloss on the mechanics. Get the body in the coffin in the ground on time. That's what it's about. I bet his corpses don't smell of cinnamon. Yeah. We'll see who runs this village.
Rudyard, you're talking to that mouse again, aren't you?
Her name is Madeline.
It's not normal.
Antigone, you spend 23 hours a day in a mortuary. Don't tell me what's normal. Off you go, Madeline. We'll continue this later.
You haven't moved all afternoon.
I don't need to move. I'm plotting.
Where's Georgie?
Day off. No work. Plotting.
Rudyard, for the first time in our lives, we've actually got competition, which means we could really do with having some friends. So could you get out there and make some?
I'll do it tomorrow.
Have you at least gone round to check up on Mr. Askey?
Who?
Mr. Askey, the man we've been waiting to die for 6 weeks. Because so help me, I need to embalm somebody, and it could quite easily be you.
Look, Mr. Askey's immortal. He'll never die. So what's the point in talking about it? Now look here. Georgie? What? Right, we'll see you there. Mr. Askey's dead.
Is he?
Yes. Oh my God, Mr. Askey's dead!
How?
Heart attack half an hour ago. It's all round the village.
taken it. I'm so happy.
Took him long enough.
Oh, he's dead.
Run! Stop being happy and get over there now.
Sorry, yes. Get over there. I'm gone. Rudyard is back in the game. Rudyard is going to get wet. Have the mercury ready!
And Rudyard... Don't cock it up.
Before you judge Rudyard too harshly at his delight at an old man's demise, I should tell you that Mr. Askey was Rudyard's old PE teacher at school, so his delight is almost entirely justified. Rudyard met Georgie at Mr. Askey's Bijou residence at 5:45.
Okay.
Georgie!
Sir?
Say it again for me, won't you? Say it again.
All right, Mr. Askey's dead, but listen, I've got to tell you...
Let's get in there, my son, whatever that means.
Yeah, I ought to
God,
say...
I've been looking forward to putting him in the ground. Can't mock me for losing the 200-metre dash now, can you, Mr. Askey?
Before you get excited...
Right, yes, got to straighten up. Yes, think grave. How do I look?
Miserable.
Great, let's go.
But, sir... Could we please have some quiet out here? Oh, it's you, Mr. Fun.
Afternoon, nurse. May I take this opportunity to convey my most profound condolences?
Thank you, Mr. Fun.
Sure, my apprentice, Miss Crusoe here, has already carried out our preliminary duty, so I think in the interest of efficiency we should let the dog see the rabbit. If you'll take me through...
Well, this is actually rather embarrassing.
Oh, please don't say it's a false alarm.
In a sense, yes.
Oh, for... Georgie, you said he was dead.
He is dead.
But, nurse, one of us in this corridor is deeply confused and I'm beginning to think it might be you.
No.
I knew it, she's mad. Grab her, Georgie.
I'm not mad.
That's what a mad person would say. Georgie!
Let's do this.
Rudyard, great to see you.
Chapman!
Busy afternoon, eh? Hello, Georgie.
Hey, Eric.
Stop flirting. Nurse, I demand this man be taught to vacate this Bijou residence immediately.
Look, this is my bad and I've really got to apologise for this one, but...
Mr. Askey requested it.
He what?
With his final words, he said he couldn't bear to get buried by such a feeble little weed as Rudyard Funn.
Interesting, man. He wanted to see my gold medals in the 200-metre dash. Gotta say, I wasn't expecting business to take off quite so quickly.
You're doing a most proper job, Mr. Chapman.
Well, thank you, nurse. I think we'll collect him first thing tomorrow. Anyway, must run. Good to see you, Rudyard. Georgie, enjoy yourselves.
Ah. Oh.
What a charming man. I hear he's still a bachelor.
So am I.
Yes, well, hardly surprising, is it?
Ah, well, can't win them all, eh, sir? Sir, are you all right?
I am so... 6 o'clock.
6 o'clock?
6 o'clock, the cemetery. Stanley's widow, Stanley Carmichael's widow in the cemetery at 6 o'clock.
Oh! Yeah, I forgot about
that. What time is it?
About 5 to 6, but you'll never get there. Sir! Oh, for God's sake, Rudyard! Come back here, you stupid...
Rudyard raced down the cliff, past the trees and through the streets with a speed that would have finally impressed Mr. Askey, had he not already been dead. His lungs aching for breath, his limbs trembling with the effort, Rudyard tumbled into the cemetery at exactly 1:01 to discover...
It's all...
Ah, there you are, Rudyard.
Reverend, what's going on?
Well, I arrived to oversee the preliminaries on Mrs. Carmichael's transferal to a better world, if such a place exists, which I'm not certain about one way or the other, and I found that her family and friends had been gathered together already for the funeral.
For the funeral?
Since the deceased was already here and sensibly dressed, he just got it done out of the way. A young fella named Eric got his own funeral practice, I understand. I'm hearing marvellous things about it. He's got a coffee machine, you know.
Chapman.
Led them all in a couple of sing-songs, actually. Even had my speech prepared for me. Very succinct it was. Breezed through it all in no time.
Chapman.
Oh, he also found a lake over there. I think we're all going boating in a minute.
He owns a boat, you know.
Chapman. Anyway, I'd better be getting back to it. We're having jelly and ice cream. Bags of fun. Goodbye, Rudyard. Or should I say, enjoy yourself.
I see.
Well,
Hello, Rudyard.
No!
Oh. It's you. Did a fair job, I hear. Congratulations. Oh, don't think it'll always be like this. They won't hand it to you on a plate, you know. They won't do that. This is very much the exception.
What?
What? You can talk, can't you? Well, say something. Rudyard, have a nice evening. What do you...
What do you mean, have a nice evening? What did you mean by that remark, Chapman? What if I don't want to have a nice evening? Hey, what if I don't... Chapman! What did you mean? Chapman!
Today had been the worst day of Rudyard's life, until tomorrow came along and topped it. I was there to jot it all down, from first-hand observation, and a little bit of gossip I picked up later. And, of course, being his only real friend in the world, Rudyard tells me everything. Oh, my name is Madeleine. I'm going to be the first mouse to write a Sunday Times bestseller. And I know for a fact that Rudyard wants to revenge himself on Eric by... Well, we'll burn that bridge when we come to it.
You just heard The Bane of Rudyard, Season 1, Episode 1 of the very funny and touching British podcast Wooden Overcoats. Many thanks to our guest David K. Barnes, head writer for the series, and Tom Crowley, Wooden Overcoats writer and actor. Tom plays the role of Eric Chapman in the series, the mortician who puts the fun in funerals. Tom, by the way, pronounces his name Crowley, not Crowley, which of course is a crime against the English language, but we won't hold that against him. David and Tom joined us by Skype from Wooden Overcoats headquarters in London. Speaking of podcasts, which we do with frightening regularity on the Holy Crowley Hour, we have a preview of a wonderful locally produced podcast, The Diarist, to play for you now. The Diarist is a neo-noir thriller exploring the darker side of the human psyche and the terrifying consequences of indulging in base desires, which pretty much describes all of us here on the Holy Crowley Hour. Here's a taste.
Mr. Hayes's office, how may I help you?
Andrea, it's Marilyn over at Kennedy Parker Construction.
Hello, Marilyn. Would you like me to connect Mr. Parker to Mr. Hayes?
A fish surrounded by sharks. A secretary cursed by desire and ambition. Introducing The Diarist by Donna Barrow Green. The Diarist, an addictive psychological thriller, satirical, suspenseful, and full of twists. Available on iTunes or anywhere you get your podcasts.
Yes.
I'm sorry if I've hurt your feelings. Or if something I've said has led you to believe I think you're incompetent.
It's just been so long since you've given me any encouragements or compliments on my...
Andrea. I do notice you. I like that blouse on you very much. You look very pretty, just as you are right now.
Oh, well, I...
It's very pretty on you.
Thank you.
What sort of fabric is it?
It's silk.
It's lovely. You have excellent taste in clothes. I notice. Would you mind removing your cardigan?
My sweater?
Yes, so I can see the blouse in its entirety.
Why?
I like it very much. You see, I do notice you. You know that, don't you? I don't have to tell you I notice these things. You know when I like something, don't you?
I don't know. I repeated his words in my mind. I notice you. That was it, wasn't it? I wanted someone to notice me. Not Andrea the daughter, the wife, the secretary. Not even Andrea the artist or ad girl. I wanted someone, anyone, to see me. More than anything, it was Richard. Please don't think unkind of me, dear reader.
You're listening to the Holy Crowley Hour on KBOO Portland, your dark and lonely radio station. I'm your host, Ken Jones, no relation. We just heard a trailer for the locally produced neo-noir podcast, The Diarist, which is written, produced, and co-directed by Donna Barrow Green. Donna very foolishly agreed to be a guest on a future Holy Crowley Hour, if there is a future, so stay tuned. Well, that's all for this episode of the Holy Crowley Hour. If you like what you heard tonight, you can tune in every fourth Monday of the month from 11 p.m. to midnight, and you can stream previous episodes from our Holy Crowley Hour page on the KBOO website, kboo.fm. Many thanks to our guests tonight, David K. Barnes and Tom Crowley, of the very funny and touching British podcast Wooden Overcoats, maybe a bit too touching for our HR department. And a big thanks to Crowley cult members and Holy Crowley Hour producers, Jason Harder and Natalie Motti. I'm your host, Ken Jones, saying see you all again next month, Monday, August 27th at 11 p.m. In the meantime, I'll be heading outside the KBOO studios to catch a ride back to Carl Crowley headquarters in Beaverton, where Carl and I will be exploring the darker side of the human psyche and the terrifying consequences of indulging in base desires. Good night, everyone. Joe Woods is coming up next with Faraway Places. And Maria, if you're listening, we'll always have Siberia.
From Russia with love, I fly to you. Much wiser since my goodbye to you. I've traveled the world to learn I must return from Russia with love. I've seen places, faces, and smiled for a moment, but oh, you haunted me so. Still my tongue tied, young pride would not let my love for you show. In case you'd say no, to Russia I flew, but there a man I suddenly knew you'd care again. My running around is through. I fly to you.